Hello, you're listening to Drawn to the Flame, a podcast for fans of Arkham Horror, the card game. We're sometimes fortnightly, we're sometimes monthly. I'm your host, Frank, and today I'm joined by...
It's me, Peter. Hello, Frank.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing great, really well. Much better than last week, actually. Just
great.
Enjoying the sun.
Oh, which is good. It's still sunny.
Stayed That's for nice. A full week, if you
Amazing.
Can believe it.
I can believe it. That's wonderful.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, thank you. And I'm excited to dive into this episode as well. Another of Peter's ephemera.
Oh, yeah. I guess it is.
From the magical bookshop that is Peter's periodicals. Yeah, I don't know what I'm saying. But yeah, so we're doing another topic that we sort of bandied around a bit in our chat together. And we wanted to record some of that chatting and see where we get to. And the theme of this topic, generally speaking, is what makes a good signature card.
Yes.
Just to be clear, we're not talking about weaknesses.
No.
We're talking about the good signature cards.
We're following up last week's episode on what makes a good keyword with what makes a good signature.
Yeah. And funnily enough, actually, there is weirdly a sort of link between the two, which is that when we were talking about keywords, we were talking about how they might impact deck building, the choices you make in your deck. And I then started thinking about signatures, where, of course, this is the one choice you can't make when you've chosen your investigator, which is what signature to pick. Now, there are a couple of investigators where you could be making a choice around signature. But generally speaking, for most of the investigators in the game, the bit of your deck you don't need to look at is what your signatures are, because they're just fixed. In they
yes.
go. And that has meant that for me, certainly, I don't always think about the signatures very closely. And maybe it's only late in the deck building process that I'm reminded, oh, that card, I've got that. Oh, should I have been doing something with that? Or, oh, yeah, that's good. That helps me out. So I think I imagine I'm not alone in that. But it would be nice to return and think about signature cards in terms of, can we remove them from the investigator that they're in and look at them in isolation? Does it matter? Are signatures only powerful because of the investigator they're paired with? All of those questions are floating around in my head.
Yes. So what do you want to get out of this episode, Frank?
I'm curious about the power level of signature cards, which I know is a loaded term, power level. And I wonder if we can talk about the power level of cards, of signature cards divorced from the investigator they're in. In our chat, you said, look, they're hard to rank in isolation of the investigators.
Yes.
And I suppose I'm interested in what makes, in our opinion, a bad signature card.
Mm-hmm.
You've done a little list of what you think might be some of the factors. And then likewise, flipping it on its head, what makes a good signature card?
Yes.
Because there's a lot of signature cards, I think, that we look at and we go, oh yeah, I can see how that fits with that investigator. But does that actually make them a good card or just a card that they have to run? And yeah, I'd like to find that out.
Bro. Well, should we dig in?
Yeah. Why don't you tell us what you've got down as bad signatures?
You put in a little, like, dramatic reading as short one-act play at the beginning of this here, which is just a
I didn't make this up, by the way.
I know, and it's a transcription of our Facebook chat. Do we want to... Should we just...
We're going to do a reading, are we?
No, I think should we just skip past it? I don't know whether you'd wanted... You'd thought my initial point was worth sharing, or should we just carry on?
No, share it. Yeah.
Do you want to read it in the style I would say it? Or how you imagine I said it?
You would have probably like pointed both of your fingers at the microphone, finger guns, and gone, hot take, Tommy should have had a customizable signature.
God, that's such a good take, I think.
And I replied, can you imagine? And can you imagine if all of the Scarlet Keys investigators had customizable signatures? Which would have been
an episode on power level of signature cards?
Question mark.
It's a good question, and one. Oh, it's not really a question, is it?
Yeah. And I then said, "Is part of what makes Luke so strong that he has gate box out of the gate box."
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, let's not talk about whether or not Tommy should have had a customizable Becky. I can't imagine it, and I don't want to imagine it. Tell us what your list of what makes a bad signature card
yes.
bad in Bunny is.
And this was sort of very quickly put together. So I'm willing to have this list dismantled over the course of the episode, Frank.
Yeah, good.
I put four items. Don't synergize with the investigator ability. So mm-hmm. either tangential or almost counter to what the investigator wants to do.
Mm.
Don't have a great example off the top of my head. Maybe something like, potentially you could say Jenny's 45s.
Okay.
Which I mentioned before we started recording, which is a big fighting thing when I don't necessarily think you build Jenny as a big fighter often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You certainly can. She's just got very flat stats. I don't know.
Didn't
have a very good example for that one.
Mm.
And then I've also said don't synergize with the Gator's team role.
Mm.
And one that popped into mind here was actually Bonesaw.
Oh,
potentially.
Interesting. Okay.
If you build Vincent as a support / clue getting character, a weapon as his main signature asset, well, it's not really his main signature, to be honest, but as one of his signatures, that conflicts or doesn't synergize with what you want him to do.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not.
And you compare that actually with Carolyn with hypnotic therapy, which gives her a card that gives her a way of healing horror and boosts that healing. So it's like, if that's what you want her to be doing and you see her signature, it's like, I don't need to find any other cards. I can heal horror now.
Then I put reducing usefulness over a campaign, or at least don't keep pace with the alternatives. So this was in my head after watching, Amber Orton did a video recently, a tier investigator ranking of every investigator, which was really good, a really good watch. And one of the points she makes in that video is that you want your investigator ability to grow in power over the course of the campaign, to keep pace with the increased challenge as you go through the campaign. And she calls it scaling. You might imagine an investigator who just has a generic extra action. She's talking about both investigator abilities and their signatures in this, by the way.
Yeah.
So if an investigator had an ability that had just an extra action, that grows in power over the course of the campaign as the rest of your deck grows in power, because you can use that action more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And this is especially kind of, I think weapons fall victim to this.
That was what I would have gone to straight away. Yeah.
Because weapons need to be able to keep pace with the increased health on the enemies.
Yeah.
With, you know, potentials.
And higher fight values and so on and so forth. Yeah.
I can't think whether there's any, but an investigator signature which only did one damage, for instance, that would be increasingly harder to justify as you go through the campaign.
Well, funny you should say that, because actually my thoughts went to contradict you to Mark Harrigan and how Mark Harrigan doesn't have a weapon signature, but has a way of healing himself, moving a damage from him with the home front
onto
enemies. And I would say my feeling is that that does scale, because in the first scenario of a campaign, having a +4 combat icon, heal one, deal one damage, is fine. But having a +4 when you're fighting a great old one and you really need to land that hit, and you're using a big weapon and you're just adding that one extra damage to get you to 5 or 7 or however much damage you want to do, it starts to shine. I agree, it doesn't change in how much damage it can move. It never heals him more than one, but it's a useful card that stays useful throughout a campaign.
You could make an argument.
You could argue either way, couldn't you?
Yeah, the damage on Mark grows in power because he's able to boost more effective actions.
Yes.
So giving a +2 to a 5 XP weapon is better than giving a +2 to a machete or something like that.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And my final one was conflict with other cards an investigator might want to take.
This is a really good one.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. And the one that popped out actually was Zoe's Cross, which sits in the accessory slot. And I think there's quite a few accessories that Zoe would really like to take.
Yeah.
I don't think Zoe's Cross is bad, incidentally. I think Zoe's Cross is really good. But it being
there's
the
a
accessory
one damage
slot,
it's not a one damage weapon, but there's a one damage ping. Yeah. That maybe goes down in power as you go up. I'd add into that, like, I think again, weapon signatures tie in with that. At the start of a campaign, sure, I've got, I don't know, Roland's special or so on and so forth, and that's fine in my hand slots. But as soon as I upgrade into that bigger weapon, whether that's a shotgun or a flamethrower or a BAR, whatever it is, I'm almost certainly not playing the signature anymore, unless I'm also running extra slots. Yeah, that's a way in which a signature falls off in power. What about your list of what makes a good signature?
It's basically everything I said, but the opposite.
Synergizes with investigator ability in some way.
Yes.
Synergizes with the investigator's role on the team, grows in usefulness over a campaign, and doesn't conflict with other cards an investigator might want to take.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, shall I pick out one? I think it takes quite a few of these.
Yeah, please.
Let's go with, the name just popped out of my head, Vault of Knowledge.
Vault of Knowledge. Wow, okay, yeah.
What Vault of Knowledge does is it draws a card for an investigator at your location when they successfully investigate, right?
After you successfully investigate, exhaust it, and choose an investigator at your location, they draw a card. Yeah.
So when you successfully investigate, a player draws a card, but typically it's you. And
typically it's you, yes.
So it synergizes with your ability, which allows you to draw an additional card when you draw a card in the investigation phase.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, tick, first box, synergizes with the gator ability. It synergizes with your team role because it triggers off investigations. So it encourages you to do more investigations. You're a seeker, high intellect. Your team role, as Harvey, is almost certainly going to be clue getter.
Mm-hmm.
Or some sort of hybrid of clue getting and support. Over the course of a campaign, as the rest of your deck gets packed with good cards, this allows you to draw into those good cards. So card draw is a very kind of basic way of keeping pace in terms of power.
Yeah.
So it's just drawing you more good cards. As the rest of your cards in your deck all get better, this draws you more of them. Big tick there. And it's slotless. So you just slap it on the table and it's there, right? It doesn't use a slot.
Now, I forgot to say there's a game you can play listening at home, which is that when we name a signature like Vault of Knowledge, you yell out the name of the investigator who belongs to.
I should have said Harvey right at the start there. Apologies.
Yeah, no. Don't. This is the fun game for the listener. Yeah. So we'll try and not name any investigators in this episode, and you, the listener, can shout out and test. I actually found that really challenging as I was working through listing them all. I was going by investigator and I was like, yeah, I know what their card is. It's, you know, it's the cross. And then I was like, hang on, is it called Zoe's Cross? Is it something else? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Zoe's Cross. Because obviously some of them don't have the investigator's name on them. I thought that was a great example. I completely agree. It also gives you +2 hand size, just as if you didn't need more from Vault of Knowledge.
Sorry, just for the listeners, there was another 45-minute digression there as we read
we had a giggle.
several card reviews on ArkhamDB.
So now we're faced with the unenviable task of running through every single signature in the game and ranking them on your good and bad signature schema. We're not
settle
actually
going
to do that. We're going to pick a few that jump out.
For our first five-hour episode.
Yeah, I have gone through every single one with little comments, and you have then highlighted some ones that you want us to talk about in particular. To give you a flavour of the kind of comments I've done, for Vault of Knowledge, I'd just written banging. So it's not like I've put a detailed assessment behind. I've just thrown in essentially my shooting from the hip first take on them.
I don't necessarily want us to try and tick those four boxes for every single one of these cards, because, as I said, I'm willing to be challenged on my kind of ranking of them.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they give us a bit of a framework for how we look at these.
Let's talk then about a signature that is held up, generally speaking, as one of the best signatures in the game, which would be Duke.
Ah, okay, cool. Tell me about Duke, Frank.
So Duke, obviously everyone's shouting out which investigator can take Duke. Duke begins in play, which is pretty cool, and gives the investigator in question two action abilities. The first is a way of fighting with a base skill of 4 and +1 damage, and the second is investigating with a base skill of 4, and you get to move first. And if that wasn't enough, Duke also comes in with 2 damage and 3 horror soak, or 1 and 2 if you're not going to have Duke killed. Why is Duke considered so good? Well, first of all, Duke starts the game in play.
Mm-hmm.
This matters because one of the age-old complaints about signatures is you might not even see it.
Yep.
And whether that's that big a complaint or not, or whether that means you should run more card draw is a separate discussion. But I've also seen people suggest tweaks to the game, including that you start the scenario with your signature either in play or in your hand, that if you want to lean into the kind of I really want to be this character, you should have a way of seeing the signature early. And what that means about your signature weakness, I don't know. So that's first thing, of course, that Duke is available from the off. So I think that definitely skews how people view Duke, because you definitely get to use Duke. You can't say, oh, Duke wasn't good this scenario because I didn't see him. You did. Always.
Yeah.
So that's good. I guess the other thing is that Duke is in an investigator, Ashkan Pete, who has weak intellect and combat stats. And Duke turns Ashkan from a 4-2-2-3 into a 4-4-4-3, so above the curve stats. Duke also comes with a built-in, you know, action compression of move and investigate and damage compression in the fight. So there's a lot of different good things going on. And then finally, of course, having a one-stop shop for all of those things is awesome in solo. So yeah, there's a load of different things that you could say make Duke good.
He's an interesting one. The thing that strikes me is that saying he's a good signature card in isolation of Pete kind of misses the point, right?
Mm.
He starts the game in play.
Which is an Ashkan Pete ability. Yeah, it's written on Ashkan Pete.
And he's got those two abilities on him. So his ability is to allow you to fight at a higher skill value and to investigate at a higher skill value. But if we look at Pete, Pete has subpar stats, 4-2-2-3, which is a pretty rough stat line.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got bad, he's only got 5 sanity, and but doesn't make up for that in terms of a higher health value. He's only got 6 health.
Mm-hmm.
So Pete in isolation is a bad investigator.
Yeah.
I've said it. Come for me. I know people love Pete. He's bad.
Yeah.
But he starts in play with Duke, which levels out his stats to make him almost fours across the board. So sort of he's 4-4-4-3, which is a really like rock solid starting point, I think. And with a little bit of action compression built in, the free move and the free damage.
Yeah, when you add the vitality of Duke, he's an 8-8.
Yeah, yeah.
If you were going to allow both of them to be eliminated, which is up there with stellar levels of endurance.
So yeah, I think that assessment of Duke in itself sort of is a great example of why I wanted to do an episode like this, and why I said I think you said something like, can you assess signature cards in isolation from their investigators? I don't think you can.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. Because imagine you put Duke in, say, Jenny, who you've mentioned already. Then Duke is just giving Jenny a +1 intellect. And a move, or a +1 combat and a fight. And that's okay. Yeah. But the other thing, of course, that we've missed here is that Ashkan Pete has a discard a card to ready a card ability, which means you can use Duke multiple times in a turn, which pretty much no one else could do. So, of course, they combine nicely. And I guess if we look at your good-bad list, does Duke synergize with the abilities of Ashkan Pete? Absolutely. Does he synergize with Ashkan Pete's team role? Well, Ashkan Pete normally is a kind of flex character. You can lean either way. Absolutely. You've got it there. The question about usefulness over a campaign, I would say that I have found that Duke can, particularly in terms of being a combat solution, start to struggle later in campaigns.
Exactly what
fighting
I would have
at a
said,
four is not enough.
And were you going to say this with the conflict with other cards?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you have a point to make?
Go on.
Well, I mean, to build on what you said, I think you're absolutely right that for a kind of a plus, well, he's a +2 stat, but he's, which sounds good, but objectively, he's a 4, which can be affected by static boosts.
Yeah.
So you have this thing where, I think he does reduce in usefulness because he becomes less good compared to other weapons later on in the campaign, but he doesn't stack with weapons.
Yes.
So in order to get a decent boost, you're going to be looking at a +4 fight weapon.
You want a fire axe. You want to be dark horsing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because you've got to build up from Pete's inbuilt stat of 2.
Mm.
And I think that exactly the same applies to investigate. Like you can't build other plus damage effects on top, unless you're taking like a vicious blow or a deduction or something like that, that you're putting into those tests with Duke, you know, you can't build in further action compression on top of him.
Mm. And this is where I've seen with Ash Compete decks kind of links back all the way to what I said at the start, which is that you might almost discount your signature when you build. It's like the signature is great, it's there, it's useful, but actually, if I'm going to think about long-term damage solutions, if I decide Duke is not that for Ash Compete, I need to think of other things. And, you know, I've heard about like a spell slinging Ashcan deck. There's various different versions out there. The Yotl deck, I think, is probably the closest to saying, I'm going to just keep finding ways of boosting.
Yeah.
I'm going to find lots of plus stats. But yeah, it you can kind of almost make your signature defunct by the deck you build, which is really curious, isn't it? Where should we go to from here?
Well, good question. Can I talk about a really classic, one of the most classic signatures? I think by card number, probably the second signature in the game.
Right.
Which is Daisy's Tote Bag.
Hmm. Wonder which investigator that belongs to.
The Daisy's Tote Bag, 2-cost asset, which gives you 2 additional hand slots, which can only be used to hold tome assets. This is a lot of tomes when you get it in play.
Hmm. Yeah, a lot of tomes.
In my head, in fact, whenever I think about Daisy's Tote Bag, I always think it's 1 additional hand slot.
Okay.
And I look at the card and like, oh, it's 2. That's even better. This is an interesting one, I think, because it's very tightly themed alongside the investigator who shall remain nameless, obviously, for people to try and guess, gets an additional action to use tome assets.
Okay.
Which is a very flexible action. Pretty flexible action these days.
Yes. Yeah. Which reminds me, we definitely need to do a Revisiting Daisy episode something like that, because there's so many tomes now. And I feel like a modern, like a Daisy in 2024 will be different from a Daisy in 2016.
Yeah.
Eight years ago, can you believe it?
The difficulty, I think, with the tote bag is you obviously need to find it. If it's kind of stacked later in your deck, then you're in a tough position. But luckily, Daisy has Old Book of Lore, which is an incredible filtering tool. You can see far more cards in your deck than you would do. Like, to constantly not hit it, even as you start to get your deck quite thin, you become very, very unlucky in that situation. So, I think there's absolutely a synergy, that's the right word, with your Gator ability, because your Gator ability wants you to play lots of tomes. Yeah. And I think over the course of a campaign, as you start to get better tomes in your deck, as you're upgrading them, this helps you keep pace, doesn't it?
Yes.
It doesn't inherently provide a better boost as you go through, but allows you to make better use of your ability, have more of your XP cards in play. I think that's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And your tomes are going to be hopefully tailored to what your character wants to do in the campaign.
Yeah. There's definitely no conflict here with other cards the investigator might want to take.
Yeah, it's slotless.
It's just giving you 2 slots, but not in exchange for a slot or anything like that.
Yeah.
Does it synergize with Daisy's team role? Now, this is an interesting one for me, because I would say the reason I often end up not playing this card is that my priority is get clues.
Yeah.
And really, until Grim Memoir came out, the main clue things I'm thinking about is magnifying glasses or fingerprint kits and deductions. And the idea of spending time playing tomes that might help, you know, with movement or Obok of Lore with drawing cards. That's nice, but that's almost surplus to requirements of get clues. And the idea that I would spend an action to give myself more slots to play more tomes. Again, this is why I really want to revisit Daisy.
Yeah.
Because historically, I would think of Daisy's Tote Bag as a not very strong signature.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with it, but it's like, maybe it's my hang up about getting extra slots all over again, but it's like, great, I've got 2 more slots, so I could even spend a turn playing this and filling those slots. But how have I actually contributed to progress, and how has that set me up to be a more efficient part of the team?
Yeah. I think that's a legit. Yeah. I think that's legit. And my experience with Daisy is quite some time ago. I played her a lot around the time of the core set, and in the early years of the game. And I've not revisited her seriously since then.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think one of the issues is that you didn't need that many tomes to get good use of Daisy's ability early on. There wasn't even that many tomes around. But I think it was now
Encyclopedia and Old Book of Law.
And even if you've got the like the Esoteric Atlas or whatever, you know, are you really using both of those in a turn? Do you need to have them both available at the same time? Well, you can have them both because you've got two hands. Do you need more hands to have more of them in play? Yeah. Does provide some insulation against the weakness. But also, I think that the other thing that's changed is lots of tomes don't have action abilities.
Yeah.
And just want to sit in play, providing some kind of passive benefit. So, Occult Lexicon, which I think is really good.
Yeah. Give yourself your blood rights.
Dream Diary, which, basic one does have an action ability on it. But once you've upgraded it, just becomes add a card to your hand every turn if it's in play.
Yeah.
So what you might find is you've got Old Book of Law and then something else that has an action and then some ancillary support tomes in your hand as well.
Yeah, and even if you're using the tote bag for one slot then and you've got a spare slot for her weakness, so you're not going to lose one of those turns when the weakness comes into play, that in itself is nice. The other thing, of course, is like maybe you are running a magnifying glass or a fingerprint kit and that's taking up a hand slot and then you get another couple of slots for tomes. Again, no bad thing. And I do want to go back and do that, like, massive, you know, maybe parallel Daisy, the massive tome suite, and use Arcane Enlightenment to get even more slots, trading in my arcane slots for hand slots. And that could be really fun, like a sort of six-book Daisy. I don't know what you do with it, but it could be cool.
Yeah. So we've talked about probably one that I think is quite good, one I think's okay, but maybe falls down on the reducing in usefulness. We maybe talk about a couple in parallel where we're going to talk about team role.
Yeah, okay.
And that's Jenny's Twin 45s. Mystery is who that belongs to.
Yeah.
And then also both of Tony's Long Colts.
I wonder who that belongs to. Yeah.
Are they called Tony's Long Colts?
Yeah, Tony's Long Colts. Yeah.
Amazing.
They're called Tony's 38 Long Colts.
There we go, right. They're smaller than Jenny's Twin 45s.
Yeah, yeah. But he's got two of them.
Yeah. So, and also he has two separate ones, whereas Jenny's got two that she can only hold at the same time.
Yeah, therein lies some of the problem, right? So Jenny's Twin 45s, in case you've forgotten as well, you can put as much ammo as you want on them when you play them, as long as you've got the resources. So there is a sort of payoff for being rich. You can have like a sort of 10 ammo gun.
And then worth noting that Tony has another signature, which is his bounty contracts.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Jenny first. Jenny's Twin 45s is X cost, yes, as you said. So action, spend one ammo, fight, you get plus two combat for this attack, and this attack deals plus one damage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an okay gun. It does use both hand slots. And I think, like you just said, that starts to kind of clue us in to what the problem is. What would you say is Jenny's role in a team and how does she go about achieving that role?
I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to dodge that question entirely and say that part of the challenge here is synergizing with whatever role she has because it takes you down this combat avenue.
Yes.
And flat stat line, lots of resources. In theory, she's flex. Generally speaking, when we think about the powerful, like the primary rogue stats, we're thinking about intellect and agility. But there is some role for combat to have a space in there as well. And then I guess the other part that this really falls down for me is filling up both of your hands really conflicts with other things that you might want to do with those hand slots.
Especially if you want to be flexible.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to be flexible, if you want to have a lockpicks and a switchblade or a lockpicks and a thieves kit or some other combination, and because it's Jenny, you could also be subbing in, a magnifying glass, something like that. Suddenly, that all gets shut down.
I also think there's some really good high XP rogue weapons as well.
Yeah.
Which this doesn't stack up against at all.
No, exactly.
And can I say something else, Frank?
Yeah, go on.
And
yeah,
another
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
So I've got a bone to pick with my synergize with Gator ability here as well. So what's Jenny's ability?
Gain an extra resource each round.
So ultimately have a lot of cash.
Yeah.
So does this synergize with having a lot of cash? All you've done is made the card expensive.
Yeah.
Like, you can pay a lot of money for the card and get more ammo, I guess. But, like, is that synergizing with her ability? Is it saying you make a lot of money, therefore a synergistic card is just one that's expensive?
Yeah. Imagine if it was 5 cost, 5 ammo, and it read, for every 5 resources you have, it costs 1 less. So if you were rich, if you were on 25 resources, this would be like a free 5 ammo gun. But
that's
if you've only got 5 resources, you just play it down for 5.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you're right. You think it's synergistic, like, oh, she gets resources. Oh, this uses resources, but it's not synergistic because this is a payoff for those resources, but it might actually run counter to your money talks, your well-connected, your cunning, all of the cards that care about having a lot of money.
Exactly, because you spend all your money on your guns, and you can't use well-connected.
And I remember early in the game playing Jenny solo. I think Jenny is a good solo investigator. And getting myself in a hole with these, where you're deciding when's the good time to play the Twin 45s. And knowing
how much money you put into them.
Yeah, if I play these, I've done it before where I've played them and put, say, like 7 ammo on and been broke or been close to broke and then needed to play something else like an elusive to get away or even like a working a hunch to get a final clue and I'm broke. And it's like, the guns aren't actually doing anything right now. Or similarly, doing it the other way around, not putting too much ammo on it and then really needing one more bullet and being like, oh, bugger, I can't do that now. So, yeah, there's like that's a skill thing, I think. That's about knowing your deck, knowing the scenario, but it becomes tricksy, essentially.
And interestingly, I don't want to do this too much, but you compare this to the Green Man Medallion.
Yeah.
And that has a direct synergy with her ability, which is you can transfer money onto it. So it's like you can build up a lot of cash, then slowly siphon it onto this. I think it's not the same as a card just being expensive. And also it translates to something you might want to spend a lot of experience creating that role in for the team in her, which is how the Green Man Medallion fits it. I think it's just a much better fit for Jenny, in my opinion.
It just, it adds a new payoff, doesn't it? And the payoff, it's not a payoff and it's not an anti-synergy, but it's then the resources you've accrued are also XP, which is amazing. One thing I did when I went through all the signatures is I didn't look at parallels and I didn't look at replacements, just for the sake of all of the cards that we wanted to go through. So we compare this to Tony. You've already mentioned that this investigator that has bounty contracts and 2 Tony's 38 long colts. So already there's 3 positive signatures for this investigator. The bounty contracts come with 6 resources. You can place them up to 1 to 3 on any enemy. Tony gets extra actions against enemies with bounties. And the long colt reads, when you play one, you can, if you want, play the other from your hand for free. So you can play both of these weapons if you have the hand slots for 3 resources.
Mm-hmm.
They have 3 ammo each. And spend an ammo fight. It's just +1 combat for each bounty on the attacked enemy. So it could be +0 combat. The attack deals +1 damage. But if they kill an enemy with 1 or more bounties, you place a bounty on bounty contracts. And of course, you get the resource from the bounty as well. So there's an amazing synergy here with Tony's extra action and with bounty contracts all combined.
Yeah.
If Tony just had bounty contracts, you'd be getting 6 resources and 6-ish extra actions in a scenario, probably more than that, depending on how long it takes you to deal with bountied enemies. But with the long colts, if you can get it right with the ammo, you're basically doubling that because you're killing 6-1 bountied enemies with 6 bullets and doing that, which is incredible. You make a lot of resources, you get a lot of extra actions. And given that he has combat 5, even a +1 combat boost is already decent for the weapon.
Yeah.
Jenny's +2 combat for the 45s doesn't touch the sides of this, really.
Yeah, absolutely. That takes her up to 5. This takes him up to 6. And even though the ammo is far more limited, like you play the second one and then you try and get through your deck or you put some additional ammo cards in your deck.
Yeah.
You know, it's so good. It was reflected in the fact, if you want to build a fighter, you know, you compare Jenny and Tony. Tony's like just knocking Jenny out the water in terms of killing enemies.
I said off air, but I'll say on air as well. When I think about strongest fighter investigators, I think about Mark Harrigan and Tony Morgan. just straight away. And I know there are some other Guardians who would compete for that. But Tony, in terms of raw damage output, is just amazing. And I'm sure part of it is having extra actions to fight so he doesn't get stuck in that Guardian problem of needing to move and all of that kind of thing. And then having two weapons just straight away in the deck is, yeah, so nice.
Yeah.
Straight away. Now, as we were talking here and I was trying to clarify about how the Twin 45s don't synergize with Jenny or do, I guess what I'm starting to feel is that idea of, like, does a card synergize or not with an investigator ability is maybe too binary. And actually, when I went through my list, what I saw was that there are a whole slew of signature cards that they don't synergize or not synergize with the investigator ability, but in fact add another layer or another way of doing that thing, which I guess you could call that synergistic, but it's also that idea of being more yourself. So mm-hmm. like lean into that more. So for instance, a good example of this is Bonnie Walsh. Bonnie Walsh has some icons on her, which is great, but then also she allows you to use the icons of other cards more, so you get to be more Charlie in using Bonnie. And I think probably the standout example of this is Arbiter of Fates, where, yeah, it's really like it could be worded even simpler than it is worded. It could basically say your limit once per round is now a limit twice per round. And that in itself is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really curious in a way, because, like, is that a synergy with her ability, or is that just giving her more ability? It's like, be more Jackie.
Yeah.
I think of it as really strong then, if you're already leaning into playing around with token values or leaning into knowing the bag, one of the ways that you're held back with that, it's like when we were talking about Kohaku, like, Kohaku can do all of this fun token stuff, but what happens to the rest of the team who are wading their way through a 30 token bag that's filled with all sorts of nonsense, and you get a bit stuck? And yeah, with Jacqueline, it's like her ability's great, but you only get it once a turn. But what if you got it twice a turn?
Yeah, yeah. And this is a pretty direct connection to, as you build your deck and you build your experience into your deck and you get better at using it, mm-hmm. being able to use her ability more is going to be better.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, as you want that spell that you're casting to land really well, because it's going to be more damage or more clues, you have more chances for that to happen, and so on and so forth. You can even combine it on the same test and draw loads of tokens to really make sure something succeeds, which is really nice.
It's
really
sort of
enjoyable.
Heightening the synergy of everything, because one would hope when you build a Jacqueline deck, you build your deck to synergize with her ability.
Mm.
So
you'd hope.
You'd hope. More chances to do that is more good, as the kids say.
Mm. Mm.
I don't think kids say that.
Another card that does a similar-ish thing about sort of encouraging you to be more your ability, but actually is slightly different, is a card like Becky.
Yes.
Because what Becky does is it takes the investigator's ability but adds a kind of new wrinkle.
Yeah.
So Tommy's reaction ability is when a card is defeated, you gain resources based on the damage and horror on that card and shuffle that card back into your deck. And then Becky says, oh, actually, those resources could be ammo on me instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you make of Becky?
It's a difficult one as well, because this is what kicked off the whole conversation, wasn't it?
Mm.
And it's such a... My point was, Becky is a signature part of Tommy, I guess. It's a gun with a name.
Yeah.
But it suffers sort of from the same thing as Jenny's gun.
Yeah.
Guns,
yeah.
Which is that it, you know, if you want to build Tommy as a fighter, you need to have enough weapons so that he can find his weapon and then have it in play. Yeah? This is one card in his deck, and it uses up both hand slots. So it wants to be permanent. You want to have this in play. And it's got a direct interaction with his ability on the weapon.
Mm.
And you could then build maybe a style of Tommy, which plays Becky and then potentially replaces it with another weapon, or is able to make really good use of the kind of ammo expenditure cards.
Yes.
Like Warning Shot, for instance. I don't know whether there's many that are great. Mm-hmm. You could maybe say, what's that one? Is it one in the chamber? Is that one where you can take an extra shot?
Yeah.
So
when you run out of ammo.
But only when you run out of ammo, exactly. So you can maybe make an argument like that, but like you can't hold any other weapons at the same time as Becky unless you start putting Bandolier in your decks, which is like clunky, it's an extra one.
And all of those extra like ammo weapon playoff cards are essentially dead in your hand until you've played Becky.
Yes, so there is exactly.
That possibility that Becky's sitting at the bottom of your deck and you're like,
you've got all like
I could use my warning shot on my 45 automatic, but do I want to do that when
And you're there like, do I want to waste all these assets for the extra resources when I could be getting ammo, but I don't have Becky yet. I need to keep drawing Becky. Cards to find Becky.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it's just a really tricky one. And it doesn't
also Becky only comes into play with 2 ammo. So if you play it early and you don't play any of those soak assets or don't take damage and horror, you can also be in a situation where it runs out of ammo. And you're like, well, I do want to keep this weapon in play because this is going to be my weapon. Except it has no ammo now. And so then are you starting to run extra ammo or other cards that add ammo when you already have a baked-in ability to add ammo? It's just that ability's not firing. Like, you're really at the mercy both of your deck and the encounter deck for it all to happen, which is super awkward. The kicker for me with Becky is how the reduction in usefulness over the course of the campaign.
Yes.
Plus 2 combat, plus 1 damage is fine early on.
Yeah.
I've had a lot more fun running Flamethrower Tommy. And unfortunately, Becky became
just
icons.
Exactly. Just gets committed to a test. And I guess the root of my kind of slight frustration is that because it's a named unique weapon, it's not just Tommy gun, Becky. It feels like it should be a bigger part of his character and how he plays. Mm. And after the first couple of scenarios, when you've spent some XP on some better weapons, it just becomes icons.
To be a Becky apologist, of course, you could say because it has potentially unlimited ammo, you could lean into enchanting it, putting reliables on it, putting well-maintained on it. You could do the whole building the mega gun and add all of these different extra things, custom ammunition, so on and so forth, to make sure it's really strong. Yeah. I have tried that style. And then what I found was all of those cards in my deck could also attach to my flamethrower.
Or we could use the teleporter.
Unfortunately. Actually, I think that's a really fun way of playing Tommy, is you start out with Becky being your gun. And then Tommy's journey is to realize that he's like, the gun he loved as a young cop is now no longer cutting it, and he's got a new gun that he attaches all of his interest to and attaches all of these cards to as well.
I can use a bazooka instead.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's growing. His character growth is that he's grown in weapon. Yeah. So, yeah, it reduces in usefulness, and I guess there is a conflict then around cards and investigating my
sort of ticks the first 2 quite well. So it does synergize with his investigator ability. It's like written right on there.
Yeah.
It synergizes with his role because he wants to be a fighter, I guess. He wants to be killing
things. A signature fighter, yeah.
Yeah, signature fighter. I hope you're going to cut that bit out. But yeah,
Now I've done a callback joke to it and I have to keep it in. I'll cut it out.
But yeah, but it reduces, and we've got that, you know, it doesn't keep pace with other weapons, and it blocks up both hands such that you can't even take other weapons if you're holding it.
I guess we've done a classic thing with our list, which is we've missed out like fun and theme and that kind of thing.
Mm.
We've gone for the hard-headed analytical. And I'm sure there are people out there who love Becky almost because it allows them to play that gun-toting style where they've got their favourite gun and it never runs out. It's like, back to the wall, I just keep firing. And I've enjoyed playing Tommy in that kind of paladin savior role of like taking all the hits for the team as well.
Yeah.
That's fun. You know, there's fun in that. You know, when we think about some of the signatures we've talked about, like something like Daisy's Tote Bag, I don't find that a very fun card, but I find Vault of Knowledge incredibly fun. Vault of Knowledge, you're like, ha ha ha, I am being awesome.
Yeah.
And on that note, like a card I'd love to mention is On the Lamb.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's one of those cards where I love the story it tells. And yet often I found, more often than not, probably 95% of the time, it's a really nice skill card and it's a commit. That's a real shame, I think, where you get like a really evocative signature that then, for whatever reason, doesn't really land. Actually, do you know what? In the Shadows as well is similar to that. It's like, yeah. What do you use In the Shadows for? You use it for +4 to evade shadow agents.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
a shame. Like, it's two cards in Rogue that do a similar thing. Like, oh, I can sneak away and be cool and sneaky. It's like, can you? Maybe you just use these icons.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So what have we learned?
What have we learned?
I don't know. I think it's a, I sort of stand by the list. I think there's some useful points on there. I think we have been, maybe what we should have said when we talked about Duke is that the direct power level of the asset doesn't matter that much because you're always using it in the context of the investigator it's in.
Yes.
You can maybe say that it's almost a balancing aspect. If an investigator's really, really good, maybe in isolation, the signature cards don't look as strong.
Yeah. And funnily enough, neither Rain nor Snow, one of the reasons why that investigator, you can shout their name out right now, is so good, is that they get 3 copies of Neither Rain nor Snow, which is anyway a pretty potent signature card. So yeah, like I totally agree. An investigator might have what feels like a weaker signature card, but they're a stronger investigator. Yeah. And you play them because of the investigator, not because of the signature. Which links us all the way back to, like, do you care about the signature when you're building the deck? Maybe not.
Potentially something like the Heirloom of Hyperborea maybe falls into that bracket. And it's fine as a card, but
people have made it into a draw engine, especially with the spell events. But for a long time, it was not that useful.
But it didn't dent the popularity or even, in my opinion, the power of Agnes.
I think of that card mainly as a teaching moment where someone draws it, it's the signature, and they want to play it, but we've only got 3 turns left in the scenario.
Yeah.
And then you can say, okay, yeah, cool, yeah, play that down. And then at the end of the scenario, oh, okay, you played that, it was 3 resources. Yeah, was it worth it? You idiot! Did you not know there were only 3 turns left? What a waste! Yeah, that I wouldn't say that, but yeah. What I guess I'd like to end the episode with is a shout out to the listeners. First of all, how many did you get right? Obviously, I want to hear that. And did you disturb anyone on your walk or whatever you're doing by yelling names into the ether? Second of all, though, obviously, we've only scratched the surface with all the different signatures. And is there a signature that to you jumps out as either a really intrinsic part of an investigator, as in, oh, I play this investigator because I love this signature so much, or the flip side of that? An investigator, they really like the investigator, but the signature is, in your view, garbage or needs a bit more love. So I'd be really interested to hear what other people's kind of gut reactions are. And you can get in touch with us. We're drawntotheflamepodcast@gmail.com. We're Drawn to the Flame on a lot of different social media. And we're also on Patreon. And if you become a patron, you can come and talk to us on our Discord. It's a great place to talk about episodes that you've listened to and the game in general. So yeah, please come and say hello. Peter, how can people get in touch with you?
I am Unitehold everywhere, so I'm on Steam and Discord and Blue Sky, and Instagram is the.unitehold, so please say hello. How about you, Frank?
I'm around the place as Zooey Glass or Zozo, and then also FB sometimes. I should probably be a bit more consistent with that, but there we go. And yeah, likewise, say hello. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.